All right, here we are again, episode 6. It's really happening.
Keep them coming.
Yes. So we had quite a chicken scare this week. Yes, a chicken scare. What is a chicken scare, you might ask? So we have three chickens, and I've built a fairly secure coop area that has a little automatic door that lets them out into a semi-secure little pen. And just before it got dark, I noticed there were three chickens in there, and I went back inside. And after it got dark, I went outside, and suddenly there were two. And we looked all around. No sign of a struggle. There had been no noise. There were no feathers, nothing. We walked around the yard, nothing. And so it was one of those situations where no explanation really makes sense. The odds of a predator coming in the small window when we weren't outside, having no noise and leaving no sign, seemed unlikely, but equally seemed unlikely that the chicken would be sitting in the yard making a noise when we wouldn't see it.
Your chicken could have conjured a portal.
That's actually what we're leaning towards, because we went to bed assuming the chicken's gone. We don't know how exactly. And then in the morning, looked out in the yard, and there was the chicken walking around with a very scraped up head. But other than that, quite well. And so one of the lessons there was, you know, in the face of unlikely explanations, it's probably the simplest, which was why, you know, for a predator to sneak in quietly and remove one chicken with no noise and no sign was just less likely than the chicken somehow hiding in the yard. And so I was both happy to get the chicken back, but also to, again, once see the principle of the simplest explanation most likely being correct.
I love it. So you're telling me it didn't go on like a Bill and Ted's journey where it went through some crazy portal in a telephone booth and went on a crazy adventure and then came back and happened to have some scratches?
It's possible. We do not know. We may never know.
It's a good mystery.
That's what it
is. It's a magic mystery.
It is. It is. So what's hot on your plate?
What's hot on my plate? Had a really good week, a lot of good team bonding. I know that's been a theme that we've talked about on a couple of our episodes. Really impactful. The retros, remember like maybe episode 3, we were talking about like this transition from kind of theatrical retros to more realistic ones that were healing and focused on action items and just better. We kind of have kept that going. A lot of really kind of awesome collaboration that comes out of that vulnerability. So yeah, I mean, this week we've crushed it. It's hilarious. They're one of the customers on one of my engagements is like super opinionated and extremely like glass half empty vibe, like can never be happy. Even like, you know, they strike gold. They find like the lost arc, a signal that they've never been able to acquire before. And like, they still find a way to like highlight something that's just like poorly aligned or not completely finished. And I think the team has just converted that into comedy. And I think that's actually become fabric that makes everybody kind of laugh together. Cause like we're crushing it. Like, you know, the thing we're building and against any competition that exists is just like more realistic. It's not just like vaporware, and we're like super confident in it. So like when we have this kind of engagement and experience this back and forth, it's less like upsetting or stressful and like hilarious. And that's like another interesting step in kind of the right team building direction.
That's great. It sounds like an opportunity for something I've been thinking about this week around commander's intent.
Okay.
Which in this context of the commander in this case would be the client or the person who is giving your team this mission.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like based on that friction, this could be a gap. This comes from, there's a book I love called The Art of Action by Stephen Bungay.
Okay.
And I'll read a little piece of it that I think will help it make sense when he talks about strategy and how intent works in there. He says, strategy is essentially an intent rather than a plan, because the knowledge gap means that we cannot plan an outcome, but only express the will to achieve it. And the effects gap means that we cannot know for certain what the effects of our actions will be, and that we will probably have to modify our actions to achieve the outcome we want. We can only do that if we are clear about what outcomes we desire.
Mm.
A lot of it was based off of studies of the Prussian army in the 1800s, but at the end of the day, it's pretty similar to the Agile Manifesto when you think about it. Without a clear where are we going? What is the outcome we want? You're not going to get anywhere. But equally, if you pretend like you can predict how everything will go and your plan is so specific and rigid that it falls apart when inevitably things don't go that way, that won't work either. So it's this notion of you have to have a stake in the ground. What is the outcome you want? But then leave massive flexibility around how you're going to get there. How does that strike you for working with your product owners?
It's tremendous. And just also as like a former service member, I always used to say, like, you know, no one's more agile than like the warrior in the trenches. And it couldn't be more true, right? Because like there was some interesting period, you know, 2018 to 2020, where service members, different, you know, military branches were trying to adopt agile. A lot of it was applied to software development, but it's really kind of just the way that I think we fight wars at like the, you know, operational layer and below. I'd say even the tactical layer and below. So there's like three levels of abstraction: strategy, operations, and tactics, or strategic, operational, and tactical. And, you know, obviously the closer you get to tactical and effect delivering, they literally call it that, like the less confident you're going to be in the environment that you're trying to impose an effect on. And there's this beautiful, I mean, it's not beautiful, it's sad, but it's hard to maintain disconnect between strategy and tactical, because the operational layer kind of sits in the middle of all of that. So like one of the biggest elements of command and control is like, how do you constantly kind of, how do you empower people to make decisions they need to make with the right equipment, the right, you know, assets and, you know, things surrounding them to be successful, while also kind of trying to be accurately strategic? And it's always so hard, right? And like people point to like data and technology and all these different things. Well, those things are available. They're hard to solve in environments where you don't have an adversary that's trying to take them away from you. But in the military, unlike a lot of other commercial companies, yeah, there's like, you know, ransomware and there's always vulnerabilities out there, but it's not the same when you have like an entire nation state trying to prevent you from using a network or something. It's just like a different level of denial. So it's like, it's so important to be agile and to also have the commander's intent, which is like a form of context that's associated with a loose outcome where you can at least make decisions a little bit better, regardless of how chaotic your environment becomes.
Yeah. What would you say? What are some things? Because to your point, I think the military does do a better job of the commander, again, saying like, take that hill. This is the hill that we want. Might leave it up to the teams to figure out how to do that. But I have seen that's where a lot of businesses struggle, of where the business leaders aren't able to connect that as closely or describe that. What have you found, or what would you recommend to people who that you've seen allows that to work better in the military, you know, taking that over from when you've been given missions effectively by your clients to help make sure that you understand where they really want you to go?
I think it's really interesting. Obviously, in the military scenario, it's all about like incentivization. Like, I think people are incentivized to create the most accurate and best strategy to be successful, to live for the next 24 to 48 hours. So it's kind of like when the stakes are high, and like they're high in business, but they're really high when you're, you know, a specialist in E4 and like a trench with like a rifle. You obviously want to model an environment well enough and introduce all the variables you need to consider for a likely successful outcome, given a bunch of different, you know, possible situations. Like, we can go this direction, and if the weather, you know, starts to ramp up in this certain way, or, you know, if their weapons don't work like they intend, there's so many interesting variables where it's like kind of choose your own adventure. If this happens, then like if then statements almost in real time. But you also want to incorporate the flexibility where you take 20 options and, you know, prioritize five really good options, five different really cool pathways to that hill or getting on top of that hill. And I think, you know, for business, when people always say business is war, you know, depending, everyone has like a different level of intimacy with the outcome, right? Like, it's very straightforward and easy to share the same level of intimacy when it's like, it's either us or them type mentality. And I think that's what leaders try to do. And it comes across as like, you know, too like money hungry or greedy or visceral or whatever, but it's a really easy kind of like placeholder metric or a placeholder thing to like start to create that same incentivization, that same demand, where revenue is just like very easy to communicate, very easy to understand, very easy to understand like competition that both want to take that hill. That hill might be an opportunity towards like increased revenue or something. And, but it's just, it's a different game. Like people are just going to care less. They might be more interested in the craft or the puzzle that they're provided, the puzzle piece they're providing to the larger puzzle. It's natural. It's human nature. So good leaders need to find more creative ways to create that incentivization and create that authentic demand and bias for action.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cause I think people rightly push back on this notion of business's war because they, you know, they're like, I don't want to hurt people. I don't want to kill people. Like it's not, you know, it's not war from a actual physical danger perspective and suffering. But as you were saying, there are some aspects of that that could be beneficial of the notion of this matters. It, you know, it's too easy when you're not in, you know, risk of bodily harm, when you are given an unclear command effectively or directive. And if it doesn't really make sense or you don't really understand it, it's too easy if you're not in this business's war mindset to be like, eh, you know, I don't really care. I'll do something or I'll do my best. You know, I'll try because the stakes are, frankly, in your mind, you know, so low. And so I think that's the challenge is how do you take the pieces of the war setting of I actually need to understand what I'm supposed to do and what is needed without bringing, you know, without including the violence. So it's taking what does translate to business well, because that's what I've seen fairly often of, again, it's too easy for people to not push back on the, you know, again, I'll just say commander, you know, in a non-military setting, because it just doesn't matter to them so much. They're like, ah, it's a big company, things will roll, maybe we'll lose a lot of money, it won't come down on me, versus, you know, if you don't understand the military commander, you know, you could die, or lots of people could die. And so yeah, it's how to raise the stakes without, you know, obviously physical threats.
Yeah, and that's always going to be a challenge with teamwork. You know, I think there's in a beautifully simple way. That's why like warfare is pretty straightforward and cool when it comes to motivating people and incentivizing team and collaboration. What's equally exciting is like taking a non-wartime scenario and trying to incentivize and excite people using like different levers, right? And it's like, you know, it could be a combination of things from what I've experienced, or at least how I execute. A lot of times when I'm at like the company level, like you've definitely seen me and worked with me at the growth level, it's kind of like, I want to be able to acquire this work and be able to have an opportunity to work with this partner, because I don't think our competition can, you know, maximize this like public investment like we can. Like, I think we can deliver more. Mm-hmm. We're going to care more. We have a higher attention to detail. All the leadership, everybody to my left and right are going to hold me accountable for execution. You get this belief in self and team, and it's like, no one can execute like us. And that creates this teamwork of like, don't let them screw this up. We need to win this thing, or our product needs to perform better, so the market benefits, or whoever's benefiting from it benefits. And then, you know, similar to warfare, you know, in health service, there's a bunch of other scenarios where the outcomes are just as dire. And those are equal motivators, right? If that becomes the desired outcome, it's like prevent life loss or extend, you know, the joy or kind of comfort of somebody if you're in like hospice care or whatnot. And so like you could find really interesting, inspiring metrics that tie back to like, you know, human morality and like just feeling good about the things you're doing, but also people's tradecraft and their ability to contribute and see that contribution convert into like measurable value that changes an environment or a person's life. So it's really down to that emotional kind of thread that's similar, not charging a hill, but finding it in business.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you hit upon it, of the notion of how does what I do fit in to what the level above me does, to what the level above them does, such that you are part of this larger thing and you understand, if I don't do this, these are the impacts, again, to the business. Where again, like in the military, if one piece doesn't do its job, it becomes insanely apparent, you know, that something wasn't done. And so that, you know, incentivizes people to do their part. But yeah, in a business, it's so easy for one department or person's failure to execute to just become part of the noise and not be clear what's going on. And that's, you know, I think frankly on the leaders at each level to ensure they understand what outcomes are desired of their group, and then to make sure that's exceptionally clear to their people. And that's how you get the buy-in.
1,000,000%. You get the buy-in and you achieve your outcomes, most importantly. And I think there's a one-to-one comparison. Like, you could literally diagram this out and take a company's kind of structure, right? Even if it's flat, because, like, to be honest, war fighting is very flat. Like, attrition's high, people get promoted on the field. Like, it's insane. Like, all out major theater warfare is very flat. And essentially, there's these big desired outcomes and objectives, like you just described, like take the hill or, you know, secure the bridge or whatever. Same thing for the companies. And in the same way that the military kind of slices and dices the different assets that they have to deliver those effects to make that outcome or objective more likely, is equivalent to the way that, like, high functioning good companies do as well. So, like, the military, you have artillery, you have infantry, you have armor, you have a bunch of people that are all wearing the same uniform with different equipment and different abilities to change their environment or introduce effects to an environment that they're trying to change. Same thing with product companies, where you have customer experience, you have operations, you have product teams, you have, like, all these other players that have their own assets and equipment that can all achieve an outcome collectively, right? Like, product team builds something, they release a feature people don't like. Customer experience buys them runway by swooping in and giving them a, you know, a benefit or reducing their bill. Like, I mean, it's very military-esque, and it's all about kind of defining those objectives well and inspiring people to align them on those objectives the same way a battlefield commander would.
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, as we get ready to wrap up, I think what we want to start doing is making sure we leave our listeners with something to ask themselves. And something to take away and do. And so, you know, along this theme, one thing I wanted to ask people is again, how well do you know your commander's intent? You know, again, whether that is a military commander or your manager or your VP or the CEO at a company, you know, do you truly know what outcomes they are expecting from you? And if not, what are you going to do about it? That's on you. To raise the issue if you're not sure what outcomes they want. Because again, you might be able to get away with doing the wrong thing, or you may think you're doing the right thing and the company can get away with doing the wrong thing and uncoordinated for a while, but eventually that's not going to work. If you do, the next question is, do you believe that they are aware of the obstacles in your way? They have given you this outcome they want. And do you think they understand what they've asked of you and how hard that's going to be? And whether or not it's actually feasible. And
I got a third when you're done. I got a third.
Okay. You'll have a fourth because I got a third.
Oh, do you really? I'll have a fourth. Yeah, you might bring it up then. See, this is unscripted. Organic. I love it.
Exactly. Because the third is, let's say they did know the challenges from your perspective. Would they change the mission or not? And if the answer is yes, then obviously, if it's a scenario where you can explain this to them and give them this new data and they'll change the mission, then that's the best way to go. But let's be realistic. That will be rare. You will be handed a mission and via time or because of the forum or whatever, you're probably not going to be able to really have a whole lot of conversation around trying to convince them why what they've just told you to do is wrong. And often that's just not a great approach. And so, if the answer is no, they wouldn't change it if they knew, then, you know, buckle up, get going, you know, enjoy the ride, figure it out. If the answer is yes, then really, again, given that a head-on pushback is probably not going to have great results, how can you start making progress? How can you say, yes, I got it? Start moving in that direction in a way that will illuminate these obstacles such that they will see them for themselves. And then based on that new data can start making adjustments. So it's not, how can you know that you going and pushing back before you start is just going to look like obstinacy, you know, and being in the way. But equally, you don't want to fail. And if you feel strongly, you're aware of something that they're not, that would cause it to fail and that make an adjustment in the plan is necessary. How can you start making progress and make it clear such that they will see it on their own and make that adjustment so that the whole team adjusts and wins? What's number four?
Or number five or six or seven or eight.
Yeah.
Just kidding. No, like, so I think it's still super relevant. And like, just one other thing to consider, I've been really obsessing over like radical self-acceptance and like knowing who you are. So we kind of talked about like, you know, the commander's intent. I'm going to do hand waving stuff. I love hand waving. Commander's intent, objectives, the environment that all of this exists in, and then you being an input to all of that. How do you like, do you know yourself well enough to be able to affect the outcome or influence the commander in a certain way? And so I think like checking in with yourself and also thinking about like how the environment, you know, views you, how your commander views you, how, you know, your actual talents and traits can like get the team closer to achieving whatever outcome they had. I think that's very powerful. And I love that. I love like self-reflecting, check-ins, journaling, business, like professional journaling. That's all very powerful. And that's how you can also define how you affect a system better and affect the outcome of getting to an objective quicker.
In short, you own it. Make it happen. All right. Well, thanks, Rob. Another great conversation. I appreciate it. That is all at this time. Over.